You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our look at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman, with a foreword by Stephen Covey. Last show we were looking at the different types of people within organizations, specifically multipliers and diminishers. We looked at the debate maker, and now we're going to be looking at the diminisher's approach to debate. Instead of looking out broadly into their organization for intelligence, diminishers tend to make decisions quickly, either based solely on their own opinions or with input from the close inner circle. Then people begin to spin and speculate and get distracted from enthusiastically carrying the decisions out. In sharp contrast to the theater of the executive above, one diminisher I worked with held meetings in his office in a two-circle format. Seated at a small round table was his equally small inner circle, who would discuss the issue and make decisions. But around the perimeter of the room was a collection of silent people standing and taking notes. After participating in this strange meeting format, I couldn't help but ask one of those voiceless individuals standing on the outer edge about the role of this silent body. She said, quote, "Oh, we don't ever participate in these decisions, and we certainly don't get a seat at the table. We're just here to take notes so our SVP doesn't have to tell us what to do later." This was less of a surgical theater and more of a lecture auditorium. Instead of framing issues for debate and decisions, diminishers tend to raise issues abruptly, then dominate the discussion before forcing a decision. Raising issues. When a problem surfaces, diminishers bring issues or decisions to people's attention, but they don't necessarily frame them in a way that allows others to easily contribute. When they raise the issue, they focus on the what rather than on the how or the why of a decision. One CIO routinely raised a variety of distracting issues at his weekly staff meetings. One of his directors explained, once he came in and raised the issue, ergonomically sound keyboards, and then went on about them for half an hour. He is intense and intelligent, but he is all over the place. He makes a millimeter of progress in a million directions. Dominating the discussion. When issues get discussed or debated, diminishers tend to dominate the discussion with their own ideas. They are debaters, not debate makers. Looking back at Jonathan Akers, where did he fall short? He gathered the right players and he gathered the right data. But he never sparked a real debate. Instead, he dominated the discussions with his opinions and shut down the intelligence of people and their drive as well. He shut down everything of the players he had assembled. Forcing the decision. Rather than driving a sound decision, the ministers tend to force a decision. They force the decision either by relying heavily on their own opinions or by shortcutting a rigorous debate. As one executive said in an attempt to drive closure after dominating the discussion during a task force meeting, "I think we're all in agreement that we should centralize this function on a global level." The group looked bewildered, knowing that this was not the shared opinion of the group. One brave woman broke the silence and responded with, quote, "No, Joe, we've heard your opinion, but we don't have an agreement," unquote. What is the impact to the organization of the diminisher's approach to decision-making? At first glance, it appears that diminishers make efficient decisions. However, because their approach only utilizes the intelligence of either only themselves or of a small number of people and ignores the rigor of debate, the broader organization is often left in the dark, not understanding the decision, nor the assumptions and facts upon which it is based. With this lack of clarity, people turn to debating the soundness of a decision rather than executing it. This spin phenomena is one of the reasons diminishers create resource drain rather than resource leverage. Debate making as resource leverage. Multipliers don't act as debate makers because it makes people feel good. Multipliers operate as debate makers because they want to leverage every ounce of intelligence and capability that they can in making and executing sound decisions. The following chart reflects why decision makers leave capability on the table while debate makers leverage and stretch the capabilities of their resources. Decision makers, what they do, engage and select an inner circle in the decision-making process, leaving the vast majority of people outside. What they get, underutilization of the bulk of their resources, while a select few are overworked. A lack of information from the closest to the action, resulting in poor decisions. Too many resources thrown at those who don't have the understanding they need to execute the decisions efficiently or even correctly. On the other hand, debate makers, what they do, access a wide spectrum of thinking and a rigorous debate before making decisions. What they get, high utilization of the bulk of their resources, real information they need to make sound decisions. Efficient execution with lower resource levels because they have built a deep understanding of the issues which readies the organization to execute. In summary, decision makers don't use the full complement of talent, intelligence, and information that is available to them. This capacity sits idle in their organization. To counteract this, they continue to ask the organization for more resources, wondering why they aren't more productive. In contrast to this, multipliers not only engage the best thinking of the resources around them, they use debate to stretch the thinking of the individuals and the team. While decisions are debated vigorously, real facts and issues surface, forcing people to listen and learn. As a result, multipliers get full capability out of their current resources, and they stretch and increase the capacity of the organization to take on the next challenge. This begs a question. How does someone learn to lead debate, like Lutz at Microsoft Learning or Sue Siegel at Affymetrix? How does someone go from being a decision maker to a debate maker? Becoming a debate maker. Our resource and experience coaching executives reveals that leaders can move along the diminisher multiplier continuum, but it requires much more than just adding some new leadership practices. It often requires a fundamental shift in the assumptions of the leader. Once this shift happens, when a leader begins to view his or her role differently, it can happen when leaders see that their greatest contribution lies in asking the questions that produce the most rigorous thinking and the best answers. Several years ago, I volunteered to be a discussion leader for a junior Great Books program at an ML elementary school. It seems like a simple volunteer job. The assignment was straightforward: lead a discussion of a group of third grade students on a piece of great youth literature. The goal was clear: have them dig deep into the story for meaning and debate it with their peers. Despite my protest that I knew how to facilitate discussion, I was sent on to a one-day training workshop to learn a technique called shared inquiry. What I found was a simple but powerful technique for leading debate. There are three rules for shared inquiry. One, the discussion leader asks only questions. This means that the leader isn't allowed to answer his or her questions or give his or her interpretation of a story's meaning. This keeps the students from relying on the leader's answers. Two, students must supply evidence to support their theories. If the student thinks that Jack went up the beanstalk a third time to prove his invincibility, he or she is required to identify a passage or more than one passage in which the text that supports his idea appears. Three, everyone participates. The role of the leader is to make sure everyone gets airtime during the discussion. Often, the leader needs to restrain stronger voices and proactively call on more timid voices. As a discussion leader, it was liberating to ask questions but not give the answers. In fact, I found it strangely powerful. And when the students spouted off their views and interpretations of the story, it was thrilling to look them straight in the eye and say, "Do you have any evidence to support that claim?" Initially, they looked terrified, but they quickly learned that the cost of an opinion was evidence. As they gained experience, they learned to respond quickly. They would assert an opinion, and then I would insist with my best intimidating look, "Show me your evidence." They would scurry to locate the exact place in the text that supported their claim and cite it with conviction. And because everyone was called on, every student learned to state their views and support their ideas with grounded data. This experience cemented my belief that there is a process and a formula for great debate. The starting block. We've gone through a master approach of how multipliers create debate, but here is a simplified four-step process to get started. 1. Ask the hard question. Ask the question that will get to the core of the issue and the decision. Ask the question that will confront underlying assumptions. Pose the question to your team and then stop. Instead of following up with your views, hold yours and ask for theirs. 2. Ask for the data. When someone offers an opinion, don't let it rest on the anecdote. Ask for the evidence. Look for more than one data point. Ask them to identify a cluster of data or a trend. Make it a norm so people can come into debates armed with data, an entire box of data if necessary. 3. Ask each person. Reach beyond the dominant voices to gather in and hear all views and all data. You might find that the softer voices belong to analytical minds who are often most familiar with and objective about the data. As you rethink your role as leader, You'll come to see that your greatest contribution might depend on your ability to ask the right question, not to have the right answer. You will see that all great thinking starts with a provocative question and a rich debate, whether it is in the mind of one person or an entire community. Discussion, dissent, and debate. Hubert H. Humphrey, America's Vice President under Lyndon B. Johnson, captured the essential principle of how multipliers make decisions when he said, quote, "Freedom is hammered out on the anvil of discussion, dissent, and debate," unquote. Our research showed that it is this discussion, dissent, and debate that also hammers out sound decisions. Intelligence multipliers know how to create this debate and support strong and generate strong support for high stakes decisions while also building the collective muscle of the organization to deliver on promised results. The multiplier formula. Decision maker versus the debate maker. Decision makers decide efficiently within a small inner circle, and they leave the broader organization in the dark to debate the soundness of the decision instead of executing it. Debate makers engage people in debating the issues up front, which leads to sound decisions that people understand and can execute much more efficiently. The three practices of the debate maker are framing the issue, including define the question, form the team, assemble the data, frame the decision. 2. Sparking the debate. Create safety for best thinking. Demand rigor. 3. Drive a sound decision. Reclarify the decision-making process. Make the decision. Communicate the decision and rationale. Becoming a debate maker. Ask the hard questions. Ask for the data. Ask each person. Unexpected findings in this research are as follows. 1. As a leader, you can have a very strong opinion but also facilitate debate that creates room for other people's views. Data is the key. 2. Debate makers are equally comfortable being the decision maker in the end, and they are not the only consensus-driven leaders. 3. Rigorous debate doesn't break down a team. It builds the team and makes the team stronger.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, Instructor of Future Studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC, but it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From our perspective, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying and neutering initiatives, visit the BC SPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman, with a foreword by Stephen Covey. Chapter 6, The Investor. If you want to build a ship, don't drum up the men to gather wood, divide the work, and give orders. Instead, teach them to yearn for the vast and endless sea. Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. It is after midnight at the McKinsey office in Seoul, South Korea. Lights are out, except for one conference room occupied by a project team that is 2 days away from a critical presentation to one of the firm's biggest clients in Asia. The team is led by Hun Ji, a sharp, highly regarded project leader. Joining them this night is Jay Choi, one of McKinsey's Seoul-based partners. Jay knows the team has a critical deadline and, as is typical, is meeting with the team to guide, challenge, and shape the thinking as they build their first major presentation of their findings to the client. The project leader, Hyeomji, is at the whiteboard. She and the team are retesting the storyline with some new facts that surfaced during the past week. The team is struggling to integrate the findings into the overarching message about the client's business transformation. Jay listens carefully and asks a lot of questions, as he is known to do. It becomes clear that the team is actually stuck. The team leader is systematically working this tough problem, but looks at Jay with that desperate look that signals, quote, "I could use a little help here," unquote. Jay has been on countless numbers of these projects and has stood in the project leader's shoes many times. He can see a storyline that the team, who's been buried in the details, has not yet considered. Jay offers a few thoughts for the team to discuss, standing up to take the whiteboard marker from the team leader. Heading to the board, he begins to list several emerging themes, encouraging the team to view the facts from a different angle. The group is thrilled to have this fresh perspective, and excited voices are now engaged in testing, pushing, and building on the ideas despite the late hour. With the new insights coming from the renewed discussions, Jay can now visualize the new presentation flow in his mind. He feels a familiar comfort up at the whiteboard. The desire to drive the team towards completion is alluring. He is tempted to lay it all out for the team so they can all go home and get some rest, finally. The consultant in Jay tells him to go on and finish the job and complete the storyline himself. But the leader in Jay signals restraint. He stops stretching and turns to the project leader, checking to see if she is comfortable with the new direction. Seeing the smile on her face, Jay says, "Okay, looks like we've got a new line of thinking to run with. Let's see what we can do with this." He then hands the pen back to Hun Ji, who resumes command of the process and leads the team to build an outstanding presentation for the client. Surely it was tempting for Jay to jump in, rescue the struggling team, and drive the presentation to completion himself. He would have felt like a hero and probably a few years younger too. And it was appealing for the team to let him do that, given the late hour. But Jay's proclivity to invest in people and their development won out. Jay reflected on the leader's role. You can jump in and teach and coach, but then you have to give the pen back. When you give that pen back, your people know they are still in charge. When something is off the rails, do you take over or do you invest? When you take the pen and add your ideas, do you give it back? Or does it stay in your pocket? Multipliers invest in the success of others. They may jump in to teach and share their ideas, but they always return to accountability. When leaders fail to return ownership, they create dependent organizations. This is the way of the diminisher. They jump in, save the day, and drive results through their personal involvement and personal ideas, personal experience. When leaders return the pen, they cement the accountability for action where it should be. This creates organizations that are free from the nagging need of the leader's rescue. Multipliers enable others to operate independently. By giving other people ownership for results and investing in their success. Multipliers can't always be present to perform emergency rescues, so they ensure people on their teams are self-sufficient and can operate without the direct presence. This is thus far, the book has explored why multipliers make people smarter and more capable in their presence. But now I ask you to consider a different question. What happens when the multiplier isn't there? What happens to people when the sunlight of the multiplier isn't shining on their part of the world? This chapter addresses this most curious question. Can multipliers create an organization that can act intelligently and deliver results without the direct involvement? In future shows, we're going to be looking at the role of the micromanager versus the investor, and we're going to be looking at other types of diminishers and multipliers and see how they apply to the modern organization. So we're going to look a bit at that before we close. The micromanager versus the investor. Multipliers operate as investors. They invest by infusing others with the resources and ownership they need to produce results independent of the leader. This is not just benevolence. They invest, and in return, they expect outstanding results. Forever strong. We're going to look at Larry Gelwitz, who stood at the side of a rugby pitch watching his high school team practice. He thought back to the first team he had coached in national championships, and he remembered them being up before dawn training together. Larry said under his breath, "Well, that was then." The team in front of him was good, to be sure. They were learning the game, but he noticed they didn't have the physical stamina of previous teams. Larry felt stuck. It wasn't like he hadn't tried. He reminded them at practice all the time. They would nod their heads, but then they didn't do it. He could cancel practices and hold fitness training in his place, but he risked the skill level of the team. He could yell at them, but that would only work for a day or two. Larry learned over to be an associate coach and said, "We need to turn this over to the captains." The next day, Larry stood up, walked quickly to the chalkboard, and drew a line on one side of the board, and on the other he said, "We have 6 weeks left till finals, and it takes a pretty good athlete 6 to 7 weeks to build the endurance required." The coaches and captains were listening to every word. He continued, "If we figure this out now, we can win the nationals. If we can't, we'll be running on empty." Larry said, "There are two options. The coaches can keep trying to figure something out, or you as the captains can take ownership for finding a solution. What should you do?" And that's the question we're going to be answering in future shows. What should Larry do to motivate his team to become the caliber necessary to win the nationals? And we're going to be investigating that question in the next show, so please stay tuned.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
Listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
This episode of Viewpoint